This is Tell Me More, the Sunday magazine on 101.1 More FM, WBEB Philadelphia. I'm Emily Scheibert. Good morning. This week, the migraine warrior Shirley Kessel, who was one of three generations in her family with acute migraine. She will tell us what it's like to face this underreported and misunderstood disorder affecting almost 20% of women in this country and the effort to drive research and tolerance, all in this edition of Tell Me More. Migraine is not just head pain. It is an overwhelming, life-altering neurological disorder that brings with it terrible pain, nausea, blurred vision, and many other symptoms. Migraine affects 37 million Americans. When asked to describe a migraine attack, Lisa Belkin, senior columnist for The Huffington Post, said, "It's like you're trying to give birth through your forehead." Another woman said, "Like a vice around my head with stabbing behind my ears and pressure behind my eyes. Pull the shades, lie down, don't move." Migraine sufferers include celebrities like Lisa Kudrow, Kristen Chenoweth, Ben Affleck, Marsha Cross, Janet Jackson, and Kareem Abdul-Jabbar. Despite the prevalence of this crippling disorder, Shirley Kessel, president of Miles for Migraine in the Philadelphia area, says people tend not to admit they have it and lack adequate specialized care when they do. Miles for Migraine holds its annual walk run in Fairmount Park, October the 7th. Shirley Kessel, welcome to Tell Me More. It's great to talk to you.
Thanks for having me.
When did you first start to become interested in migraine headaches?
Well, I experienced my first migraine when I was a teenager, and then I had what's called chronic migraine when I was 25 to 26 years old. And it wasn't until my own daughter, I have three daughters, two of which have migraine. My youngest daughter became diagnosed with chronic migraine when she was 16, and I couldn't believe I had passed these genes on to her. And I realized then that, you know, we needed something to do something to hopefully find a cure, because this is a very underdiagnosed and underserved disorder of the brain.
Yeah, I think there's a bit of a stigma around migraines, or perhaps they're not taken as seriously as they need to be, because it's not just a headache. Like, I have a migraine sounds like an excuse for something. But this really is a neurological disease. And as you mentioned, it is genetic, and they're learning more about it all the time, although we're not quite where we need to be, correct?
Oh, that's very correct. In fact, if you look at the amount of funding that migraine receives for other diseases, according to the World Health Organization, migraine is the third most disabling disease in the world, and it receives about 100 times less than other diseases receive for funding through research through the FDA, through the NIH, excuse me.
Describe, if you would, what a migraine episode was like for you and what the impact has been on your life.
So during the time in my life when I was experiencing what's called episodic migraine, which typically would only hit me one or two times a month, I would have severe head pain, and that was pretty much it. I mean, I really didn't have a lot of other symptoms. However, now that my migraine has morphed into what's become more chronic, which is 15 headache days or more a month, I have other symptoms. I have light and sound sensitivity to odors. I have dizziness, nausea. And I'm one of the people that does not experience experience aura, but there are a lot of people who do experience that as well.
And over how long a period of time are you having these pretty crippling symptoms?
I have migraine every day of my life. It doesn't go away. The head pain is what really changes from day to day, but every day of my life, I do have sensitivity to light and sound. I have ringing in my ears that hasn't gone away. And the nausea sort of dissipates depending on what kind of day I'm having.
The symptoms that you mentioned are pretty common. I mean, those are fairly widespread symptoms from what I was reading. And there are several others that are also associated with migraine disorder.
These are the nausea seems to be one of the most common symptoms of migraine. A lot of people who experience nausea can't even be away from a bathroom. When I was a young girl growing up, and my mother had also had migraine, that's who I inherited it from. She was so debilitated that she couldn't even take pills, and she had to have injectable meds, which back then there was really nothing. But she couldn't keep medicine down. So at a young age, I actually learned how to give my mother an injection of medicine because there was no one else around to do it. But some of the other symptoms that people experience are also cognitive dysfunction, what is typically called brain fog. And again, I would just say, the aura seems to be a very disabling symptom because you can be driving down a road and suddenly begin to experience an aura, and you really have to pull over or stop whatever you're doing just to let it pass.
By aura, we mean changes in vision that alert people that they're about to start having pretty severe pain and other symptoms, correct?
That's correct. Some people don't experience pain following an aura, but there are most people. I'm not a doctor. I don't know the statistics, but most people do experience pain after an aura or during.
You don't have an aura, but are there cues that let you know when you're in trouble?
Sometimes what will happen with me is I'll begin to crave sweet foods. So people tend to think that chocolate, for example, is a migraine trigger, but the research has shown that what's actually happening is chocolate could be actually a way of knowing that you have a migraine coming on, because sometimes the brain will seek out sweet foods as a comfort, and so people tend to turn to chocolate. So that's one of my ways of knowing that I could potentially have a migraine coming, an attack, as I like to say, because I do have some other symptoms all the time.
What is it like living under this cloud, if I could use that word? Because I would think that living with the daily potential for having the debilitating kind of symptoms that you mentioned is not easy, is not the best way to live your life. So explain what you can about what it's like to sort of deal with this potential problem every day.
I would say it can all be summarized in one word, and that's fear. Most people with migraine will tell you that they walk around in a constant state of unknowing because you don't know when an attack is going to hit. And for someone like myself, my migraine is pretty well controlled with medications that I'm currently taking. But if you're someone that's not on preventive medicines and you don't know when it's going to happen, you might have to go into a dark room and lie down, and that's not always available to you. You might have plans that, and this has happened to me. I mean, I missed one of my best friend's weddings when I was in my 20s because I had such severe migraine. I couldn't go. And this was back before a lot of other preventive medicines were available, and I had to stay in bed. So there's this constant worry and fear of when is it going to hit me? And I would say having to change plans and cancel plans on people and people not understanding, even family members, that really contributes to the stigma of migraine because it makes the person with migraine not wanting to talk about their disease because people don't really quite understand what you're going through. It's an invisible illness. They don't see that, something's really wrong with me physically.
Right. It is invisible. And we've all had a headache or two in our day, but this is something very different. I mean, a headache is something that's annoying, but you can function with it. What you're describing in the way of migraine is really not something you can just kind of go on with your day and endure. It is a sort of paralyzing event. How do they medically distinguish from your sort of run-of-the-mill kind of headache that most of us get from one time or another and the kind of syndrome that you're describing?
So a migraine is different because it comes with other symptoms besides just head pain. Most people do experience a headache, typically called a tension-type headache, whereas migraine comes along with one of the other symptoms that I mentioned earlier that distinguishes it just separately from attention type headache, which is usually generally controlled with Tylenol or ibuprofen. If you ask someone with a migraine, here's some Tylenol, would you like to take it, or some ibuprofen, it's almost like an insult, because it's like putting a Band-Aid on a gunshot wound. It doesn't work. And so that's one way to really understand how migraine is different. And again, there aren't many medications on the market to use for migraine because they're just not being developed.
I have a couple of friends who suffer from migraine, and I know, you know, they have their sort of go-to drugs, and it's kind of a cross fingers thing. Is Sudafed going to work? Is Excedrin going to work? Is drinking a Coke really fast going to work? These are all kinds of things that people have been using for a while now. But you did touch on the subject of medication. What is available to people today who are suffering, and how much further do we need to go in the research until we have something that kind of works universally?
Well, luckily, there are four companies right now that are racing to develop a new medication, a new class of medication, and I'll give you the abbreviation. I can't say what it stands for because it's a really long medical term. It's CGRP, and it's a inhibitor of a blocker of the CGRP receptor. And so, luckily, it's amazing that there's actually four companies that are racing to develop this drug, because it'll be the first drug that was ever developed specifically for migraine prevention. All of the products being used right now on the market are actually drugs borrowed from other disease classes. For example, one of the most common ones is a drug used for epilepsy that seems to work in about 50% of patients with migraine. But it wasn't a drug that was developed for people with migraine. It just happens to work in some people. And so, you know, one of the things about patients with migraine is they don't talk about their disease. And so if they don't begin to talk about it, then when these new drugs come out, insurance companies may not pay for it, because people aren't making enough noise about this disease and really advocating for themselves because of the stigma.
Do you find people think that you're malingering, that you're exaggerating, that they just simply don't understand?
Yes. Historically, what has happened is that migraine is mostly a disease of women. So about 70% of people who have migraine are women. And back during the Victorian era, when people with migraine, and this disease was really not understood back then, women would spend days at a time in a dark room, and they were seen as hysterical and hypochondriacs and not very reliable. And these tended to be more upper class women who were able to afford the time to spend in their rooms. And this is really one way in which the stigma was developed. And so it's been passed down. And even physicians, unfortunately, don't get the training. In their medical training, they get about 1 to 2 hours of headache medicine in medical school. I have a daughter who just graduated medical school, and she only had a few hours. And this is a very complicated, misunderstood disease.
I was very surprised to see that something like 18% of women are believed to have chronic migraine. And that is a huge number of people. So it is surprising that it's not getting more attention, but it is also understandable from everything that you're saying about the history here that people don't want to raise their hand and say, I'm a migraine sufferer.
That's absolutely correct. Women, you know, we do have a tendency to take on a lot of different roles, and migraine typically hits women when they're in their most productive years of their life. So they're starting careers, they're raising families, they're doing a million other things at the same time. And this is when migraine hits. You know, 25 to 40 years old seems to be one of the highest statistics of where it hits women. And women are, you know, used to taking the brunt of a lot of different situations, taking care of aging parents, taking care of kids, and just doing it without complaining. And so, but, you know, this really needs to change. I mean, and men suffer from migraine also. And, you know, the bottom line is we all need to start talking about it and not be afraid to actually tell other people what's going on for us.
before we sat down to talk today, I messaged my friend who does have chronic migraine and said, do you have any questions for somebody who knows a lot about this? And she mentioned a friend of hers who has a 13-year-old son with chronic migraine. So this is not just something that women get during their childbearing years, although there are a huge number of female sufferers, as you point out. I believe this 13-year-old has something that his mother referred to as a stomach migraine. Do you know what that is?
Yes, actually, there is a population of kids that will develop just pain in their belly. And so it is called abdominal migraine. And some of the newer research is showing that actually babies now that are experiencing colic are actually thought to be having migraine symptoms.
That's so interesting. And I wonder what the implications will be for treating both of those conditions and diagnosing them properly. Talk a little bit, if you would, about what this all has meant to your family. I mean, this has to be life-changing to have multiple generations in the same household coping with this.
It is so life-changing, and it's not something that strikes people because of anything they're doing in their life. It's not, you know, because of stress. It's not because of the color of your eyes or, you know, from not exercising or from doing things that are not good for your body. It is, for many people, a genetic disease. And so it has a huge impact on families. It's changed the way we can make plans, going on vacation. And, you know, the fact that my daughter had to leave high school was a huge upset to our family. She left when she was in 10th grade, and she missed her prom in 11th and 12th grade. She went to watch her friends graduate from high school, knowing that she was not going to college the following year because she was being homeschooled, and she had to wait another year till she finished. So she went to school, she went to college late. And so, you know, you miss a lot of milestones. She missed a lot of social events. She spent about a year in bed. There are a significant number of children that are diagnosed with migraine, or they're underdiagnosed or not diagnosed at all, because we have such a shortage of headache doctors in our country, and there are very few doctors that are practicing pediatric headache medicine that are actually certified in this type of medicine. And there are very few treatment options, because most of the drugs indicated for adults are for 18 and older. So it's a real problem for families. And that's why Miles for Migraine has a youth camp. We try to support those families.
The list of symptoms of migraine also include depression and anxiety. I'm wondering if these things are intrinsic to the biology of this disease, or whether it's a result of having to cope with the, as we've been talking about, the uncertainty of when you could be debilitated by migraine attack. Do you think it's cause and effect, or do you think it's an additional symptom that just comes with this?
It's a good question, and I've heard it answered both of those ways. It's which came first, you know, the chicken or the egg. So it's not quite certain from the explanation I've received, and I'm not a doctor, but I have heard that depression and anxiety are a result of having especially chronic migraine, because how can you not be depressed when every day you don't know what's happening and when it's going to strike and how you're going to feel. And it brings anxiety for the not knowing piece. In terms of the other way around, does depression and anxiety trigger migraine? I don't know the answer to that question. And I think this is the underlying problem, is that there's not enough research being done because migraine is so underfunded compared to other diseases.
There is also recorded trouble sleeping. Do you find this is a problem for you? Have you heard this from your fellow sufferers?
Absolutely. There's no question, you know, sleeping is an issue. I actually take melatonin. It helps me. But especially at my age, a lot of women don't sleep in general. However, when you have migraine and you have constant symptoms that are just constantly circulating around your body, especially head pain, it's hard to go to sleep. And then it's hard when you wake up. Sometimes it's 3 or 4 in the morning and you wake up and you start to have a headache. And how can you go back to sleep? So you need to get up, you need to treat the migraine or figure out what you're going to do and possibly go back to sleep. Or once your sleep is interrupted, it's sometimes hard to go back to sleep. So there's a whole gamut of different reasons why people with migraine may not be sleeping.
People are also urged to sort of keep a diary, I believe, about what symptoms they're having and when. Have you done that in your life?
Absolutely. There's a really great new diary that's coming out on the market. Some of the doctors are using around the country. It's an app that I use on my phone, and I do record every day. It asks me about 30 questions. So it's a little time consuming, but when I go to see my migraine provider, we can look at it together and determine what my triggers are and what changes I, can make to my lifestyle to help, other than just taking medications.
My friend who has the chronic migraine was just asking, is there hope? Can she look to menopause or change of life as a period of time that might bring her some relief? I know over the years, people were put on the pill, taken off the pill. Do they understand yet what part hormones play?
There's so much debate about hormones and a lot of interest in hormone, because women obviously are mostly the people that have migraine. Some people get better when they go through menopause, but actually some women actually develop migraine as they are going through menopause or into perimenopause. Sometimes it doesn't go away. It's so variable and so different in every person that there really is no question, there's no answer to that question. And so the hope part comes in when, yes, we might be able to find a cure. We need to find a cure for this disease. It's a serious neurologic disease. And when people get up and start advocating and speaking more about this, it's not unlike what happened with breast cancer, where women never talked about breast cancer. When I was a young girl growing up, no one ever said the word breast even. And so it wasn't until people started to talk about it and start talking about tatas and boobies and everything else and made it into a household word that the research funding changed for breast cancer. And this is what needs to happen with migraine, because 36 million people have this disease.
The CGRP that we were discussing earlier, I'm finding it in my research here, and it stands for calcitonin gene-related peptide, and that is a small protein that acts as a chemical messenger throughout the brain and body, and it is found in the nerves that supply the head and neck. So this is apparently where they're focusing a lot of this important research that you're trying to fund.
Yes, that's exactly what it is. Thank you for looking that up. And it is a new class of medicine, and the monoclonal antibodies obviously are being used in other diseases as well. And I'm just thankful that this has been discovered for people with migraine.
You've been called the migraine warrior. Do you like that term?
I love that term. Yes, because I think people with migraine need to have hope, and they need to understand that they can live the best life they can live, even with this condition, that there are things you can do in your life that may not take away your pain and other symptoms, but there is a way of coping. And there are promising drugs that are on the horizon, and there will be other drugs that will come out on the horizon when people get up and start advocating and come to a Miles for Migraine walk run and show the world that this is a serious problem and it needs to change.
Is there any sort of hint as to when something like this might hit the market?
Well, the news I've been hearing is that potentially next summer the first product might be on the market. And then there's three other companies who are also, in trials right now that have had good results. And so hopefully those will be not too far after. And some of the seizure medications do work very well for, the anti-seizure medications work well for people with migraine. There are actually several companies that have another form of that medication on the market. One of those companies actually does have a product that is now indicated for migraine. And it is a, I guess what you would call a cleaner drug that does have less side effects than the old-fashioned one. I don't know the right term, but the typical classic one. And it's also indicated for children. So this is really kind of exciting that this has been somewhat of a change for people with migraine, especially for kids.
You became kind of an activist at some point because, as you said, you strongly believe that we need to understand more of the science behind migraine. Tell me what prompted you to do that and about the organization that you're so active with.
My daughter, Sydney, when she was diagnosed at 16, went to Children's Hospital, and we were so fortunate that we had an excellent physician there. And when she started prescribing medications that were given to me when I was in my 20s, I turned to her and I said, "You mean there's nothing new for migraine prevention?" She said, "No, these are the same drugs we've been using for forever, for 50 years. And my daughter turned to me and said, "Mom, we have to do something about this." So when we got home, we looked online and we found Miles for Migraine had a walk run in San Francisco. And with a lot of coercing, we convinced the founder to let us bring the race to Philadelphia. And from there, we found a lot of people that were interested in coming out. The race has grown in Philadelphia from 40 people the first year to 500 last year. And we're in five cities now. In 2017 and 2018, we'll be going to 11 cities.
What would somebody do if they wanted to stand up and be counted and put themselves at the forefront of this movement to get migraine taken more seriously and for more research to be conducted?
Well, actually, there's a lot you can do. One of the things is to go online and look at some of the larger nonprofits, the National Headache Foundation, the American Migraine Foundation, have great websites where you can go and educate yourself further. There are Facebook closed groups that you can find that you can talk with other people online. And if you really want to make a change to show the world and be counted, come to a Miles for Migraine walk run or one of our education days or youth camp, because we are showing the world that this is a real problem, and that when people come together in community, we can inspire each other, we can talk about this, and hopefully change the needle on how migraine research funding needs to shift. So if you just go to our website, milesformigraine.org, you can see a listing of where all of our races are, our education days, and also our youth camps.
And when is it this year in the Philadelphia area?
Our Philadelphia race will be October 7th at Valley Green on the Wissahickon. And the information's on our website, and it begins at 8:30. We have a 5 and 10K and a 2-mile walk. And we also have a breakfast following. And one of the premier headache doctors in the world, Dr. Steven Silberstein from Jefferson, will be there talking about updated migraine treatment.
Well, Shirley Kessel, the migraine warrior, I wish you well. Thank you so much for spending this time with us to talk about something very important that I think maybe we don't know enough about yet. So good luck with the walk and with your continued passion to bring help for people like you and your family who have to struggle with migraine. So all the best to you.
Thank you, Emily. Thank you so much for covering this important topic.
Shirley Kessel, president of Miles for Migraine in Philadelphia. The annual walk run is in Fairmount Park, October the 7th. For more information on their mission and the latest research, go to milesformigraine.org. Thanks for joining me this morning. You can email the show or search the archive. Go to morefmphilly.com and click on Tell Me More. For 101.1 More FM, I'm Emily Scheibert.